How would you like to get up and give a talk after that? Don, Jenna, thank you so very, very much. Thank you. Earlier we read our purpose statement, you know, why do we exist as an organization? We talked about our vision, what do we want to become? What do we want to be? And then our mission. What is our mission? And our mission is to teach spiritual transformation with grace and joy. Well, you know, I can get up here and talk for 20, 25 minutes on a Sunday, and I don't know, maybe a pearl of wisdom will drop out every now and again. And we have practitioners that teach classes, and we, you know, we go through all these rigorous classes, and we do all this stuff, and we teach that. But as a spiritual community, how do we teach spiritual transformation? We do it by living the principles that we talk about. We do it by being who we say we are, by embracing these very things that we talk about on Sundays and we teach in the classes. One of the students we had in a class not long ago talked about her experience, and one of the ladies that she worked with came up to her and said, "What's going on with you anyway? There's something different about you. You're happier. You know, you don't get as flustered over things. You just seem to be a lot easier and better in the world." And I get to see that over and over and over. And that's how we teach spiritual transformation. And we hope we can drag along some grace and joy. We talk about spiritual principles. Well, today, I'm not going to have a spiritual principle. We're going to talk about what I call a life principle. And this is not Ernest Holmes or the Bible or anything else. This is, I was going to say it was dumb, but I actually stole it from Roger Teal. The more you lose yourself in a cause for good, bigger than yourself, the more you will gain yourself. Again, the more you lose yourself in a cause for good, bigger than yourself, the more you will gain yourself. Well, it's the paradox. How can you lose and gain? But it's that paradox which forces us out of our intellectual mind and to embrace it on a heart level. When we can step out of that, when we can, the things that we gain capacity, we gain insights, we gain opportunity, and we gain freedom. Freedom from the lesser needs and demands. Sounds kind of Buddhist, doesn't it? Our core message, one of our core messages, is that God is. God is infinite intelligence. God is infinite love. God is truth, beauty, peace, harmony. But sometimes we forget the and. You are an outlet for that infinite intelligence. You are an outlet for that love. You are an outlet for truth, beauty, harmony, joy, compassion. The divine current needs you. The divine current needs you to express itself. You are the avenue. You are an important link in this chain. God has need of you, else you wouldn't be here. Ernest Holmes wrote, "You exist that divine feeling may be expressed through you." Now, we do not deny the conditions of life. Life's messy. I sit with people every day, and my heart cracks open. Because life is tough. Life can really have difficult moments and difficult things. And we don't deny that. But what we do embrace, what we do know, is that we can transcend that. It's how we look at it and how we embrace it. it's easy to fall into a sense of futility. I will never beat that addiction. I am never going to get that promotion. I am never going to have a better job. I am always going to be sick. This diagnosis that I have is for life. And maybe we can't change the facts. Maybe we can't change the way things are, but we can sure change how we look at it and how they affect us. We can't change anyone's thinking for them. We can only change our own. You know, there are a lot of similarities between 12-step programs and our philosophy. There are some things that we don't agree on, definitely, but there is a whole lot of overlap in there, and that's one of those things to me. You see that much smoke, you can't help but believe there's some fire in there, and I think there's some definite wisdom in 12-step programs. Ernest Holmes, in the Science of Mind textbook. To realize that God is ever present, ever available, is to know that all of the wisdom, intelligence, and power of the universe is right where you are. This is why everything in your life depends upon your belief, why it is done unto you as you believe. Change your belief and you can change the world. Change your belief and you can change the world. Michael Beckwith, the founder of Agape, recently said, "It seems that the world has taken a nightmare pill. Turn on the television, pick up a newspaper, or scan social media, and you will likely see what one researcher has referred to as the unrelenting flow of negativity. This continual barrage of negativity has engendered a sense of fear and helplessness that is causing many to see the world as a dark, dangerous, and cruel place." Boy, that seems to be true. After seeing that on the minister's listserv, a lady, I think she was a year ahead of me, wrote, and what she wrote I thought was so profound. "As religious scientists, we know a greater truth transcends the sense of separation that is creating and feeding the nightmare. We also know that it is done unto us as we are at a critical juncture. We cannot allow ourselves to be deluded by the nightmare. It is time to claim the truth that is superior to the condition." We don't deny the condition, but we claim a truth that is superior to the condition. "We are being called to remember and to live from the truth of wholeness, peace, and love. Each of us is being called to be the change that we want to see in the world." And what I know to be true is that we live in a reciprocal universe. That is, what we put out into the universe is what is returned to us. And so if we want more peace, love, joy in our lives, it is up to us to put forth that wholeness and love and peace. Margaret Mead said, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." One activating tool for changing our outlook and our belief systems is to take a stand. The title of my talk is The Stand. No, we're not. It's not a Stephen King novel. It's not a tree stand or a deer stand. I'm talking about taking a moral stand. This has nothing to do with politics. This has nothing to do. It's talking about taking a moral stand. A stand is an unwavering commitment to presenting and promoting that which uplifts, evolves, and blesses life for oneself, for others, for our world. Again, a stand is an unwavering commitment to presenting and promoting that which uplifts, evolves and blesses life for oneself, for others, for our world. You see, by your very presence, you make a difference. By your very presence, you make a difference. The song that we did earlier, Do All You Can, was perfect, Janet. Can we do just that last little, since you're still at the keyboard? And Dawn can get up and help us. I know she can.
Do all you can with what you have, in the time you have, and the place you are. Do all you can. Do all you can with what you have, in the time you have, in the place you are. Do all you can. Do all you can.
Thank you, ladies. So how do we know when we're taking a stand or we're just doing what feels right? We're just doing something that we think might be right. I think there's a distinction. There's a difference between a stand and what I call an ego trip. An ego trip is a blind allegiance to a belief system or a path that is grounded in separation or superiority. And it can be with any group, religion, race, or any other classification. And a stand requires three things. It requires connecting, trusting, and serving. Can't get through all that today, so we're going to do connecting. Today we do connecting, and part two is going to be trusting and serving. So, a stand requires connecting. And I broke this into three things the way it came into my brain. Connecting with oneness. We are all, every one of us, connected to all. We are all connected to one another. That means that we are connected to the racist, we are connected to the bigot, the misogynist. With the things that are going on in the world that we find offensive, we are part of that. And it is part of us because we are one. I know that there are some people that really get under my skin. Oh, and every time, what I get to do is look and say, what part of me do I not like so much that I don't like this person? Connecting with oneness, three parts. Inner spiritual engagement. For the first 2 years of ministry here, I didn't participate in the Interfaith Council. And the only reason I really started going was the peace ladies about forced me to. We got to be honest about it. But I went and I was so impressed when the Islam lady with the mosque just up on the hill here told about how vandals were coming in and placing Bibles inside the walls, thinking that they were trying to defile their house of worship, when these vandals didn't realize that the Muslims teach and embrace the Bible. And my eyes were awakened, and I realized then that it's really important. If we're going to embrace that oneness, a good part of that is an interspiritual engagement, and that it's time for us to start building bridges between religions instead of walls to keep us apart. There is more that we have in common than there is that we have that is different. I still don't make it to every meeting, but I get to enough of them where they know me now. And I think that's important. The second thing is environmental stewardship. We only got one planet, and we can't keep fouling it at the rate we are. And every one of us can take part in that. No, we can't do an Exxon Valdez oil cleanup in the Sound, but each and every one of us can recycle. We can use better water. We can conserve our water more. Each one of us can take small steps, and it's a series of those small steps that make a huge difference. And the third thing is nonviolence. Violence is never an answer to a problem. Violence and forcing someone else to do your will is never the right answer. So connecting with oneness, connecting with our feelings. Ooh, this is going to be good. There comes a time when we have to stand in the fire. There comes a time when we have to reach out and we have to actually feel. We have to connect with our own feelings. You know, and that's harder, I think, for men than it is for women. Because many guys, when they were little, were told, real men don't cry. Don't show your feelings. We're taught to have a stiff upper lip. And I think that has done many of us, not just men, but it's done many of us a great disservice. When in fact, we can gain more by connecting with our feelings. After all, it is the heart that's afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes a chance. The one who won't be taken, who cannot seem to give, and it's the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. I think it's time for real men to cry. Thirdly, connecting with our heart. It's when we connect with one another, heart to heart, that we can truly come alive. That heart connection is what allows us to be that outflow for God into this earthly plane. It's not only through our brains, it's through our hearts, it's through our very souls. I'm going to leave you today with a story. Imagine that. The man's name was Nicholas Winton. It was 1939. He was in England. He was a stockbroker. And he had a ski trip planned with his friend. They were going to go to Switzerland on a ski holiday. But his friend happened to be in what is now what we call Czechoslovakia. And his friend called and said, you know, instead of going on this ski, I think you need to come here and to help me. What has happened is that Great Britain and France had decided to allow Hitler to annex part of what was that, what became Czechoslovakia. And the Third Reich Army was moving into that area, and the people were fleeing in front of it, particularly Jews. And they were very often torn from their kids. There were people that gave up their kids to other citizens to try and protect them. And what ended up happening is there was a huge explosion of orphans in orphanages all over that area. And as the German armies advanced, these kids were being captured and sent to concentration camps along with the adults. And so what Nicholas Winton did is he devoted himself. He took a stand. And he didn't have a national organization. He didn't have social media. He didn't have anything. But he took a stand. And what Nicholas Winton did is he began to rescue these kids and to get them out of Czechoslovakia and get them to England. The two countries that accepted him at that time were England and Sweden. So some went to Sweden, but mostly it was to England, and England had tough rules about it. You couldn't just send a kid back over there. They had to have 50 pounds of like an escrow account. They had to have a 50-pound account, which would mean that they wouldn't have a bunch of destitute children running around Great Britain. And 50 pounds in 1939 was a lot of money. So he had to come up with 50 pounds for each one of them, and each one of them had to have a family that agreed to take them. And so he went to work doing that. Meanwhile, he's still being a stockbroker and doing his normal job and doing the other stuff they do, but he devoted all of his resources to it. He stepped into this in a really, really big way. And over about, I think it was about 16 months, Nicholas Winton was able to get 669 orphans out of Czechoslovakia and into Great Britain, and if you went to Sweden. And nobody ever knew about it. Nobody ever knew of this. 50 years later, his wife was cleaning the attic, and she came across a trunk, and she opened it up, and she said, "What in the world? Winton, what is this? Nicholas, get up here and show me what this is." And he came up and he told her. And she was able to get some word out about what he had done. And he achieved a certain degree of recognition for taking a stand. And actually, it got even bigger than that. He got knighted. The queen came up and the whole thing. And he became Sir Nicholas Winton. And he was known in Great Britain to a certain extent. I have a little clip. Could we get the lights off, at least on this side, so we can... Yeah, there we have a picture of Nicholas Winton and the lady to his left. He was invited to this show. It was a TV show. I think it's called Your Life. It was BBC, and he was invited. And he didn't know what it was all about, but he knew he was going to be in the front row, and they had a seat reserved for him. And that's all he knew about it. Well, let's just watch the clip. Three rehearsals.
But then we went to the live show. Okay. Accidentally unplugged.
Thank you, Neil.
Here is the list of all the children. This is Vera Diamant, now Vera Gissing. We did find her name on his list. Vera Gissing is with us here tonight. Hello, Vera. And I should tell you that you are actually sitting next to Nicholas Winton.
Hello. And it was just so wonderful, so terribly, terribly touching.
In our audience tonight who owes their life to Nicholas Winton? If so, could you stand up, please?
Don't ever doubt the power of taking a stand. You don't have to save 669 orphans, but you might make somebody's life a little bit better. usually at the end of the talk, I like to leave everybody with a takeaway, the thing that I would like for you to take away. But instead, I'm going to have another kind of a long quote. This is Teddy Roosevelt. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. And so it is with this awareness of the inherent divinity that is within each and every one of us. In every moment that I invite my colleagues, the practitioners, our prayer partners, to join me in holding this community, this spiritual community, this city, this state, this nation, this global community in love and light. And simply knowing that as we get our bloated nothingness out of the way and we allow that divine current to flow through us, we can do great things. We can go beyond the world of effects. We can transcend that which is the nightmare. And we can transcend it to a glorious sunrise. And I speak my word now for all those who are in the way and the wake, the terrible storm, Harvey, that is pounding our southern shores, knowing that beyond this very real effect of storm and flood and destruction, that the sun is shining, that there is a better day, and that day is right now. And that within each and every one of us, there is peace, there is wholeness, there is joy, but most importantly, there is love. I also speak my word now for anyone who is suffering from disease of any type, whether it be physical, mental, addictions, makes no difference. I know that behind the appearance of this disease, there is a truth. And that truth is that we are, each and every one of us, whole and complete. I speak my word for those who are suffering financial challenges. We know that we live in an abundant universe. We can't count the number of grains of sand on the beach. We can't count the number of stars in the sky. And we cannot count the blessings of God that are for ours to take, ours to receive in this moment. And I speak my word for each and every person who is feeling a sense of separation, whose relationships are challenged. We just simply know that each of us is that divine outlet for God's love. And we just let God's love flow. And so we just give thanks. Give thanks for our awareness of the power and the presence of God in and as and through each and every one of us. We give thanks for the goodness. We give thanks for God. And so it is.